Good morning, everyone. As I do each year, I want to thank both the Mizrahi and, at the time, the president of the Mizrahi, Rabbi Bill Cantor, who had initiated this Yom Iyun the year that Yaakov was killed in Moshava. The Yom Iyun is really an important way that we were able to help Mizrahi kick off their new year within the city, to kick it off with words of Torah, with scholars, both local and from out of town. And this year, it is truly my great pleasure to be able to welcome my assistant, my associate, Rabbi Dov Lerner, to be delivering the first shiur. For those of you who are at KINS, you know Rabbi Lerner well. For those of you who are not, Rabbi Lerner is a musmach of Yeshiva University. He is a doctoral candidate at the Divinity School at the University of Chicago. He is an extraordinarily talented teacher and a wonderful communicator who sometimes challenges us with words that we're not sure have been invented yet. However, they always seem to appear in Webster's in the end. And so when I asked him, I was truly gratified that even though the busy season of the Rabbonus is right now, he was willing to give the shiur. And without any further ado, Rabbi Dov Lerner.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Excellent, we're all here. Thank you for those introductions. I just want to begin with a short introduction of my own to note that my wife and I both arrived in Chicago just over 5 years ago, and from the moment we arrived, both Rabbi and Mrs. Matanky treated us like family. They offered us support, hospitality, advice, employment, all important things. And we are grateful beyond words. So it is a real privilege to participate in this Yom Iyun in memory of Yaakov. Everything and anything we learn this morning should be in his merit, and his neshama should have an aliyah. I also want to begin with an apology, because from overwhelming feedback, I've been told that my title was too clear, that it just it left nothing for explanation. So I have to apologize for that, and hopefully it will become clear over the course of the shiur. So, page one, we begin. And I want to begin with a question to you, throw out to the audience. Name some events that take place in human spheres after creation. Some of the first events of human history.
Noah's Ark.
Okay, let's go even further back. The first event.
Expulsion from Eden.
Okay, what was before that? That wasn't arbitrary, right?
Creation,
the tree of life, and by tree of life, presumably you mean the sin involving the tree of life. We're not just botanists, we're talking about human affairs. There was an expulsion, there was sin. What followed the expulsion from Eden and the birth of two children? Murder. Fratricide. Excellent, that's a word I like. Fratricide. So, anyone who reads the opening chapters of Genesis, the Bereshit, cannot help but see it as a catalogue of human inadequacy, because the distance from the first man to the first murder is mere moments. And as you get to the end of chapter 4, right at the top of the page, there seems to be a line in the textual sand. We are marking a major shift. The chapter ends, V'yeda Adam od et ishto, and Adam knew his wife again, and they had a third son, Seth, to replace Abel, who had been killed. Hevel ki hargu Cain. Cain had killed him. Uleshet gam hu yulad ben. Seth also had a son, Enosh. And that's when idolatry begins. So chapter 4 ends with a line in the sand, a shift, and then a pivot to idolatry. So again, another point in the catalogue of human inadequacy, but again, a shift away from sins in paradise, from murder and fratricide, to the more potent sin that plagues us for the rest of history, idolatry. And then chapter 5 opens with four striking words. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. This is, how do you translate the word Sefer?
Book.
Excellent. We'll see that maybe that's the case.
Counting.
Excellent. We've now got our two options on the table. Let's give you the Alt Scroll translation. Account. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, this is the account of the generations of man. And then it describes again, it recaps that humanity was created by God, and then we flow into a list, a catalogue of generations, of names and dates and lifespans. And we're told that Adam lived for 930 years, and we have one of the traditional lists we get towards the end of someone's life. We have it with Yishmael, we have it with Esav, we have it with many others. But nowhere else is it in this turn of phrase, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. We get Eile Toldot Yitzchak, Eile Toldot Yishmael. These are the generations, these are the generations. And here we're told, this is the account of the generations. And now we have an ambiguity, because actually Altscroll very helpfully here uses the word account, which is ambiguous. What is an account? A story. But then again, any accountants here? I assume you're not storytellers, right? Yeah, that's what I hear. That must be why. So an account is an ambiguous word that at the same time can mean a story and it can mean a calculation. And in fact, that distinction is brought up by the commentators. The Radak says here, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, means this is an accounting. This is no different to the other cases. Eile Toldot Yitzchak, Eile Toldot Yishmael, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, this is the account, the counting. And we get years and dates and lifespans. The challenge of that, of course, is, so why use a different turn of phrase? Which is why the majority of the commentators follow a different route and say that we're not talking about accountants, we're talking about real storytellers. Look at Rashi. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, third box on the page, he says, Zohi Sfirat Toldot Adam, which is translated by most and treated by most as, this is a narrative, this is an account, a story of the generations of man. Now, if this is the story, why are we given the challenge? Again, both these figures have a challenge. The people who think this is an account have a challenge, because why use a different phrase? People who think that we're about to start a story have what problem? This is not a story. This is a list of dates and names and lifespans. So how do you justify this? And here's the word prolegomena, which means introduction. How do you justify this introduction, saying this is the story of humankind? He lived for this long. He died at this. But that's not a story. So how do you justify that? And the way to justify it is to expand the reference. We're not talking about this chapter. We're not talking about the following verses. Look in the next source, the Aderet Eliyahu, which is a recorded book published of the Vilna Gaon's commentary. Kol HaSefer Bereishis. This verse at the beginning of chapter 5 introduces not just this chapter, but the entire book. This is the introduction. Chapter 5, verse 1 of the book of Bereishis. This is the story of the generation of man. And the Ramban in the next source goes even further and says, no, this isn't limited to Genesis. Lefi da'ati yirmoz l'chol ha-Torah. This is the verse that introduces, that prefaces, the prologue to the entire Bible. This is the verse. Chapter 5, verse 1. This is the narrative of humankind. The generations of Adam. Now, what is the trouble with saying that this verse introduces the story of humankind? We're in chapter 5 already. This isn't an introduction. This isn't the place to add a prolegomena. I'm going to use that word as much as I possibly can. Right? Why are you introducing a story that's already begun? That's the challenge for them. And in the next box, we're given some answers. Rav Hirsch says, Pasuk zeh potech tukufa chadasha. This verse inaugurates a new epoch, a new era. There is a major shift. There is a line in the textual sand. We are leaving behind Cain and Abel and Eden, and we are transitioning to a new narrative. This is the story of humankind. That's the way Rav Hirsch treats it. And if you look at the Malbim divides up the first four chapters and this one quite neatly. Because what is the first pasuk of the Torah? Keep going. Reshit Barakim Shomai Veta Aretz. Any Lainas in the room? Well, what's the first pasuk? Bereishis bara Elokim et shamayim ve'et haaretz, ve'eile toldot shamayim ve'aretz. And these generations, the accounts, the narrative. So the Malbim says, yeah, I possibly made that up. The Malbim says, what's the? Is it the third pasuk that says that? The fourth one.
Perek Bet.
Oh, I knew it. Perek Bet. Excellent. I knew it. That's testing. So the Malbim says that we have the first four chapters, beginning, of course, with chapter 2, is a description of creation. That's not to do with humankind. That's merely a way of prefacing the human stories to say that God owns and possesses and created and forged the universe and the cosmos. And now we begin the story of humankind, and that's quite neat. What's the problem with that? There are human stories in the first four chapters. It's not just a discussion of creation and the cosmos and the universe. What happened? Some of the central stories of Bereshit. You've got the Garden of Eden with Adam and his expulsion. You've got the murder, the first fratricide. How could it be? The Malbim says that's not important. And the Malbim says, because they had no longevity. What happened to the children of Cain? Died in the flood. What happened to the children of Abel? There were no children of Abel. Their lines come to a close. Right here when Seth is born, and this is something often we forget, and by we I project me, forget, I always assume, oh, we're all children of Cain because Abel died. But there was a third son, Seth, and he was the leader of all of us. We are all children of Seth because Cain's children died in the flood and Abel had no children. So the Malbim says the first four chapters are really a prologue. They're really perfunctory to everything that comes next. Now begins the story of humankind. The cosmos has been forged. Humanity has made their first missteps. A line has been drawn in the sand. They've been inundated and flooded. And now we're going to begin with the human story. That's the Malbim. And the Sfar HaMor I quoted here just because he evokes what the Malbim says in a slightly different light. He's a Kabbalist, a mystic. And he evokes some idea that there was no mamashut. It was totally vacuous. Not just prefatory, it was a preface, but it is perfunctory, it is vacuous, unimportant. In his words, Kol ha-nizka merosh ha-sefer lo hayabo mamashut. Everything in the first four chapters is transient, is empty. Now that is striking language. Why? You want to begin a book with something compelling. And you're saying a Kodesh Baruch Hu wrote the Chumash, he dictated the Chumash with four chapters of meaningless material that we can skip? That's striking. We'll have to come back to that. But what we have now, again, we're all trying to just understand the phrase, Zeh Sefer Tolot Adam. This is the account of the generations of Adam. And we had two views. The Radak said this is just a calculation. This is a very traditional turn of phrase, like Ela Toldot Yitzchak. Nothing to see here. Most people disagree, like Rashi. This is the story of humankind, which then bred the question, well, why are you introducing this in chapter 5? And we've now provided a litany of commentaries that says something major happens at the end of chapter 4, deeming everything prior either unnecessary, prefatory, or vacuous, which is striking. Now to the crux of our question. Bottom of the page, underneath that picture of somebody laning. And I did turn it upside down to make sure there was no Shem Hashem there, so don't worry. The Yerushalmi quotes what is an oft-quoted phrase. Tanya, there was a writer, Rabbi Akiva, Omer Rabbi Akiva says, if you were to pick what is the core moral principle of Jewish thought, what surmises our great code of life, I think many of us would say the pasuk from Vayikra, Va'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your fellow as yourself. And of course, we're not just quoting that out of our own initiative. We have in the recesses of our mind that Rabbi Akiva picked that pasuk. Rabbi Akiva Omer, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha klal gadol b'Torah. That is the great code of Jewish thought. And everything else, as we say, is commentary. It's just love your friend as yourself. And every other law is mere addendum. It is a commentary to that. But Ben Azai jumps in. And he says, Zeh sefer toldat Adam klal gadol mizeh. The four words we've been quoting say that this is the story of the generations of Adam is a greater code, a greater principle. Now, this is my question. It is an introductory point. Even according to Rav Hirsch, that it inaugurates a new epoch, a new era, it is merely a sentence that says what comes will be a story of Adam's generations. How do you transform a prolegomena into profundity? That is our question. I'm going to say it again as many times as I can. How do we turn this introductory preface, this prologue, this single sentence with a simple meaning, what comes is the story of Adam's generations? How is that a moral code? At the very least, how does it compete with love your friend as yourself, that has been the foundational point of almost every creed and ethic in human history? Ben Azai, not only independently, in a vacuum, but right after Rabbi Akiva, interrupts to say, that's not the great code. The great code is this pasuk that introduces chapter 5. It is a stunning turn. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what Ben Azai is trying to point to is the words that follow Zeh Sefer Tolchot Adam, Bayom bara Elokim Adam Bayom bara Elokim Adam b'dmut Elokim asav oto.
Wonderful. So you actually have taken the approach of a number of commentaries, which is essentially to ignore what Ben Azai says, right? And this is not a critique. I'm just making an observation with an embedded critique. So, yes, that is what a number of the commentaries do. They say, oh, it must be that this was a printing decision because they didn't want to quote everything Ben Azai said, so we just give the first few words. But actually, the great code is not the words he quotes, it's the words that follow, saying we were created in the image of God. And that is comes in a long line and tradition of commentaries. And in fact, if you turn over onto page 2, we will see a number of commentaries that contort themselves into pretzel shapes to try and invest profundity in these four words, which seem so straightforward, so perfunctory. And that is one of the traditions I don't have on the page because I only had limited space and I needed to get the American Constitution in. So top of page 2, just to prove that I'm a citizen so they don't kick me out. Top of the page, page 2, Rabbeinu Bachya, the Yilkut Eliezer, and the Kli Yakar. They engage in exegetical gymnastics through interpretive pressure, turn those four words into a code. Rabbeinu Bachya begins. What time do I have, by the way, until? 20 minutes, plenty of time. So the Rabbeinu Bachya says as follows. 15 minutes. Oh, 15 minutes? All right, 5 minutes, all right. So Rabbeinu Bachya says at the top, they all try again to make this four-word phrase a code. Rabbeinu Bachya says, V'yitachen lomar, perhaps, even he knows that this is a stretch. V'yitachen, maybe you can say, B'milat sefer shehiach achma. When we say the word sefer, we don't really mean book. We mean wisdom. And book is just another code, a metaphor, a symbol for wisdom more generally. And what it means to say is, Zeh sefer, this wisdom, Toldot Adam, is the progeny of man. There are so many shifts to grammatical inflections in this phrase, it is nigh unrecognizable. But he is saying, maybe what Ben Azai is saying is, let's take this out of context. Let's take these four words and rid them of the narrative and say, what do these four words mean? Zeh Sefer, this book, wisdom, intellectual productivity, Toldot Adam, that is the generativity of man. That is the longevity of man. And he says, perhaps in compassion to those who are struggling with childbirth, people who are struggling with procreation. He says, if you want to know what real immortality is, if you want to know what real longevity, you want to know, Toldot Adam, what the legacies that we leave behind, Zeh Sefer. It is our intellectual productivity. It is our wisdom. It is our virtue. And then he finishes at the end, Shahari Efshah, the last part, Shahari Efshah la'olam shi'itshashev al yedei acherim. Because if we are intellectually productive and we leave a record, other people can keep that alive for eternity. Now, how on earth do we get that from an introductory verse? It says, what is coming is the story of the generations of Adam. And it literally goes on to list the generations of Adam. But Rabbeinu Bachya is forced to apply interpretive pressure by Ben Azai to say that this phrase has more embedded beneath the surface. This is not just a preface. This is not just a prologue. It uses a unique turn of phrase to signal to the close reader that there is a principle here, a great code. And the code here for Rabbeinu Bachya, Yitachen, might be that if we want to seek immortality, turn to intellectual productivity, turn to Sefer, produce a work. And Mazel Tov to Rabbi Reis, who just published a Sefer on that note. Available in all stores near you in about 2 weeks. The Ilkot Eliezer takes a different route, not quite the opposite, but he inverts the pressure of his interpretation. He says, what is this Sefer Toldot Adam? This is how he would translate the phrase. This book, Ze Sefer, the Sefer Torah, this book, Toldot Adam, is for the generations after Adam. Not for Adam. Why would it not be for Adam? Now let's just read the first words. Lola Adam Ninoten Kim Lebanava, not giving this book to Adam, but his children, Shneemar, as it says, Ze Sefer Toldot Adam. This book is for the children of man, the generations of Adam. Why? Hakavanahi, he explains, ki im shlemut Adam harishon, despite the perfection of Adam. And where does Adam's perfection arise from? How does it emerge? The fingers of God, literally. Well, not literally the fingers of God, but quite literally the creation of God. He is forged by Kodesh Baruch Hu. That is perfection. And he says, but despite that, there's something missing. And not just the famous riddle that he doesn't have a navel or a belly button, which is something that Adam Rishon uniquely doesn't have, but is linked to that. Chaser lo davar echad. He misses one thing. V'u chinuch b'yimei lidato. He never had a childhood education. He was born an adult. And according to the Yilkot Eliezer, that led, that triggered human failure. The failure to invest in education as a child, and of course we can't blame Adam's parents, and we can't blame Adam. He was born as an adult. But the Yilkot Eliezer says, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam is a great code because it is attuning us to the importance of childhood education. And it is almost a natural impulse to write it off, to think, okay, we're just trying to keep children going, feed them, bathe them, change their nappies, keep them busy until they grow up and we can have a real conversation. And here the Yilkot Eliezer is speaking perhaps to a different segment of the community, not those struggling with having children, but those struggling to cope with children, and said, oh, I can't deal with this, I can't wait for them to grow up and have a proper conversation. And here he says, this is the great code of Judaism. You want to know the great code? It is invest in your children. It is focus on their education. It is pay attention to their needs, because once you give them a proper education, you put them in good stead for the rest of their life. There, Sefer, this book, Toldot Adam, is for the children of men. That might be the best explanation. The Torah is not to be hidden away for adults, as we'll see in Simchas Torah. We take it out and we dance with the children. It is not a document for the elite. It is not a code for the aristocracy. It is a document that binds human beings writ large, including children. That is the Yilkot Eliezer. And the Kli Yakar takes another route. He makes it more abstract and philosophical. If those weren't abstract and philosophical enough, the Kli Yakar says, how would we translate the phrase, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, this is the book of the generations of man? He says, Zeh Sefer, this work, and all that it comprises, Toldot Adam, is up to man. It is the effect of man. Meaning, in his words, Amar kol zeh al habechira ha'anoshit. Everything in this phrase, in this four words, bespeaks human choice. Zeh Sefer, everything in this book, essentially, is up to you. This is not predictive, this is not merely prophetic in the simple sense of whatever I say here, you will do. Everything in this book is up to you. Not meaning you decide what it means, but you decide whether to adhere to it. Everything in this book, do not take for granted. The great code of human, of Jewish thought for the Kli Yakar might be, according to Ben Azai, human freedom. Human choice. At the dawn of human narrative, the beginning of chapter 5, we're told there, Sefer, this book, Toldot Adam, is up to you. You want to be in this book? You want to participate in this book? It is up to you. And now with that dramatic music, we shift gears. That was planned. Because those are three views that try to contend with Rabbi Akiva's profundity. Rabbi Akiva says, love your fellow as yourself. And Ben Azai says, whoa, Rabbi Akiva. That ain't it. I've got a much better one. This is the book of Adam's generations. Thank you, Ben Azai. Everyone go back to sleep. What are you interrupting for? So those three figures, again, try with interpretive pressure to bequeath it meaning. But if you look, as occasionally I try to, in the Herz Chumash, there is a simple and straightforward note that invests profundity in the simple meaning. This is the book of Adam, of man. Now look at Hertz in the next source. In these scriptural words, have a concept quite unknown in the ancient world. Humanity. What we think in 2018 is quite unremarkable, is radical, is revolutionary in the ancient Near East. To say that this book is for humanity, to say that this work, this creed of philosophy that gives you the key to eternity and the world to come is for everyone, is astounding. And that is the great code that Ben Azai notes. Rabbi Akiva, wonderful. You say you should be nice to your fellow like yourself. That has also been the creed of the most horrific dictatorships and tyrants. Be good, l're'acha, to those who are like you. In fact, when I was in YU, I remember we were in an English class, actually. I'm not sure how this came up. It was talking about interpretation. And someone said, how do you translate ahavta l're'acha kamocha, love your friend like yourself? I said, no. Ahavta l're'acha, love your friend, kamocha, who is like you. Which limits that to say, just like the people who are like you. And I made a kind of weird face, I guess, because he looked at me and said, you like it, right? And I hated it, so I've got to work on my facial expressions. But I thought, what a horrific mistranslation and butchering of that phrase. But again, that phrase has been open to the worst tyrants and despots in history. Yes, love your friend like yourself. We always think that Greece inaugurated democracy. They inaugurated the fact that more than one person has a vote. But guess who didn't have a vote? 95% of the population, the plebs, the commoners, right? In fact, the Constitution here says, we take it as self-evident that all men are created equal. Now, while that is a powerful phrase, and don't get me wrong, this is the greatest experiment in human governance, in human history, in the modern era, let's not get too carried away. What is not said in those words? Number one, women. It says all men are created equal. And number two, what's not said in those words, but clearly meant at the time? White men, right? So while we can have quite profound statements of faith that we have to treat others like ourselves, all men are created equal, once we can start defining down those terms, its profundity gets limits. And Ben Azai says, you want to know real profundity? You want to know the real code of Jewish life and Jewish thought? Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. This book is for every descendant of Adam. That's how we define worth and humanity. And in a world in the ancient Near East, which is born of chaos and ordered by anarchy, where vice and violence and might and power determine success, saying that every human being is part of God's world is a revolution. That is the great code. Zeh klal yoter gadol mizeh. This is greater than that. It's nice to love your friends, but to love your friends, you have to have a government that protects people. And to do that, you need to value humankind. You have to see human beings not as Homo sapiens with a mere genetic resemblance, but as people bound in God's code. People bound by souls. That is the view taken by the Hertz, Chumash, and Rav Hirsch in the last 4 minutes, evokes the same idea. We're not going to read it all, but I'll read a little bit. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, V'havta l'recha kamocha zeh klal gadol b'Torah. To love your friend like yourself is a great code. Achein la'amito shel davar yesh rak avera achat. He says, according to Rabbi Akiva, there is a single sin that overrides and underlies the entirety of Jewish thought. A single thing, sin. Ha'anochiyot. How do you translate ha'anochiyot?
Selfishness,
egotism, narcissism, thinking only of yourself. That is the single sin. And that's why when you are freed from narcissism and excessive self-regard, and you begin to love someone else like yourself, you can start to begin to fulfill your purpose, your mission, and follow the commands of God. And Ben Azai comes along and says, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam Zeh Klal Gadol Mizeh Pasuk Zeh Mabia Et Ha'achdut Hamin Ha'anoshi. He expresses the universality of humankind. He doesn't deny Rabbi Akiva's truth that loving your fellow as yourself, freedom, liberty from narcissism is the key to productivity. He does not deny that. But he goes on to say, we need to define our terms. We need to say, who is Re'acha? Who are these figures who we are attending to as opposed to ourselves? Min ha'enoshi, the human species, humankind. This is why this is the human story. And he continues, HaGadol Shebaposhe'im, and the greatest of sinners. And here, again, I'm not trying to go on a rampage about humankind and universalism and throw out particularism. I'm not talking about that. Number one, it's true. We are universally human. But this is also apt at this time of year. We're not just universally human across races and regions, but also moral achievement and moral worth. At a time of Rosh Hashanah, when we're standing in shul, confessing before God, we can sometimes feel less than. Or perhaps we are guilty of looking around and thinking of others, that they are less than. And here we are told, HaGodol Shebaposhim, the greatest of sinners, Hejota HaTachtona Shalachashata, the most destructive, base figures we can imagine, HaKol Katuv B'Sefer Hashem, everything in this book applies to them, Uchlul B'Toldot HaAdam, and a part of the generations, Amen. And then he has this fabulous observation that even in the graphology, even in the writing, the letters here, this message is given because the word toldot is missing a vav. Even in the statement itself, there is an absence. There is a lack. There is a deficiency to tell us that even those who appear to be deficient, even if you feel a lack, an absence at your core, you are part of humankind, and this is part of your story. In fact, the Gemara in Brachot and in three other places says, Lo nitna Torah lemalachei hasharis, the Torah was not given to angels. And while usually that is read as a concession, that we can't possibly live lives like angels, so we have to make concessions, it is quite well argued that that is actually an ideal. It was not given to robots, to angels. To angels, to agents of heaven's will, it was given to human beings who take the Kli Yakar's choice and live as human beings. So again, as we wrap up now, in the final 2 minutes I've got to expand, add a joke now. So in the final 2 minutes, perhaps we can reread this phrase and maybe justify the first four chapters of the Chumash, which we have up to this point almost written off, which we get through quite quickly on Simchas Torah, so we don't pay too much attention to anyway. Perhaps this is not a watershed verse, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, that asks us to neglect the first four chapters. Perhaps this verse is a justification of their presence, a defense of their inclusion, and an insistence that they speak to us. After four chapters of human failure and inadequacy, of murder and sin and deceit and lies and hiding, we're told not to close our eyes to that and look forward to the book of mankind, but emphatically, don't turn away. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, this is the story of human events. Don't disassociate yourselves from these failures. We all fail. As human beings, we lie, we deceive, we breed violence, we distort, we cheat, we seek others' silence. We are all riddled by imperfections and our need of immense moral protections provided by this work. And the Tanakh Chumash in saying Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, this is the book of humanity, insists that we not fail to see ourselves in those early stories, that we not write them off as mythic or metaphorical or primordial antecedents to real history. They are cautions, they are warnings. When we read of Cain and Abel, we are to see ourselves and our friends. When we read of Adam and Eve, we are to see ourselves and our spouses. These stories are human stories, and we as humans are their heirs. So at this time of year again, when we commemorate the creation of humankind, it is worth dwelling on the story of humankind, and also as we stand in confession before God, sometimes feeling inadequate, feeling deficient, that we take a moment to consider that we are heirs to deficient human beings who have risen to the challenge, and to adapt the words of Abigail Van Buren. Anyone know who Abigail Van Buren is or was? Almost former first lady, but she pinched someone's name. Her real last name is not Van Buren. She is, anyone heard of Dear Abby?
Dear Abby.
Right, I'm not American, so I had to look this up. But apparently people know about Dear Abby. One of the most syndicated columnists, advice columnists, agony aunt, whatever you call them, in the world. Sorry?
She was Ann Landers' sister.
Oh, I didn't get that far in my research into genealogy. So either way, she was Jewish. Her parents were Russian Jewish immigrants. And she was the most syndicated advice columnist known, apart from to me, across the world. And she took the name Van Buren in the name of President Van Buren. And she was once asked a question, and she is famed for having said, and I'll adapt it to talk about a Jewish house of worship. A shul is not a museum for saints. It is a hospital for sinners. That shul, she again did not talk about a Jewish house of worship, but shuls are not a guild for the exclusive. They are infirmaries for the wounded soul. So as we stand here, wherever we are in our human story, I pray that we all have a ketivah v'chatimah tova.